$7.9 million is nothing to sneeze at. Okay, 388, please.
Report to Council on grant-funded services for the survivors of human trafficking.
Mr. Fritz.
Thank you, and thank you very much to the presenters who have waited very patiently to give this report. As Council will remember, just back in December, we allocated general fund money to provide enhanced services for survivors of human trafficking, both for the wraparound services of women, mostly women getting off the street, and also as a new innovation, setting up a pilot project for a new Boy Strength program within our fantastic Women's Strength program. So I'm going to start with that because it actually is an attempt to get ahead of the curve, recognizing that girls and boys are getting involved in human trafficking and problematic behavior in middle school, which is horrifying. And how can we help boys take some responsibility for their actions as well as training girls how to be assertive? So with that, I'll throw it over to the presenter and then we'll give our report.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioner Saltzman, and Novick. My name is Caroline Haycraft. I was here in December, and I just wanted to update you all on our goals for using the funding, the limited term funding, for creating a violence prevention program for boys. So the first goal was piloting the program at two schools, and the second goal was to create a training that replicated the 34-year success model of training volunteers to teach violence prevention classes for girls and women in Portland. I'm going to talk about the first goal, and then Sarah Johnson, Women's Strength Director, will talk about the second goal. And I will launch in. So we have completed a Boy Strength Violence Prevention Program, a six-hour pilot at Catlin Gable School for eighth-grade boys. Our second pilot is in progress, and one class starts at 12:30 today, at Vestal School for sixth-grade boys. And then our third pilot will be at Open Meadow School for eighth-grade boys starting this Friday. And what I would like you to know is that two of the sites that were chosen are located in at-risk areas for trafficking and recruiting girls into trafficking. So at the end of the pilot, at the end of the pilot process, we will have successfully trained 96 boys in violence prevention, and we have also taken the Girl Strength program into those schools. So it's great to hear this from me, but I think it's more powerful to hear it from the voice of a sixth-grade boy. So we have a two-minute news clip from K2 from Vestal School. If Lieutenant Steinbrunn, if you would press
button.
Thousands
of cases of domestic violence every single year, and now they're trying something new to stop it.
They're going into middle schools to teach boys compassion. Correctly, we sent K2's Ian Parker to sit in on one of the classes, and I've never heard of anything like this before, Ian.
Yeah, it is a novel idea, Steve and Deb, and the program is called Boy Strength, and it has one goal: give kids the strength to choose compassion over violence.
They give us extra chances if we do something bad.
Harvey and I are watching his Boy Strength class in the Vestal School auditorium.
They're teaching us a lot of stuff, like when we get mad, to cool down is to take deep breaths.
You find yourself getting mad a lot?
Yeah.
And that Harvey is willing to admit that maybe proves how effective Boy Strength can be.
I just see a lot of men that don't handle themselves with self-respect. They feel that anger is the only way that they can get across their feelings. You
know? Captain Derek Rodriguez really pushed the Portland Police Bureau to create this program, which has police visiting sixth graders like Harvey. Captain Rodriguez says he sees too many men hurting their wives, their children.
We have to triage and take the most, the bad, the worst of the worst, to actually work them and investigate them. So there's a need for a program because we have a lot of domestic violence situations going on in the city of Portland.
So he wants these kids to learn that real masculinity, real strength, is sometimes choosing not to fight.
If somebody says, like, makes fun of you, like, you have strength to, like, just calm down, sit down.
So for an hour, twice a week, these boys share. They listen. They take time to look at themselves and say, what can I do better?
I've done a few things I regret.
Yeah, me too.
Do you wish that, that you'd had this class a little earlier? Do you think that might have helped you?
Yeah.
Now, PPB is looking for some volunteer mentors to help with the Boy Strength classes, and we have a link on K2.com if you're interested. The pilot program only lasts through June, but the coordinators are hoping to get some grant funding to bring the program back next year and put it in more schools. And Steve Deb, what really impressed me was that these boys, 6th graders, 12-year-olds, were willing to open up in front of their classmates and say, you know what, I'm having problems with this. This is a bad day because... This is a good day because you don't often get 12-year-olds to open up like that.
No, and that is such an interesting time.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just have to reflect for 10 seconds on being in that class. What impressed me was the boys were present for every single activity. And the counselor for that school, for Vestal School, is a girl strength instructor, is in the class with us and told us during most of the day, most of those boys are high behavior, high risk boys. During that classroom, they were calm and present. So as I move into our other goals, I wanted to leave you with that. So the two other pieces that we did that were part of the funding that we've met our goals are staff and the volunteer training. So staff, we have hired 2 assistant program specialists. One is focused on curriculum development. One is focusing on the volunteer training. And then the training, we actually have a 3-week training scheduled for June, and it's a great opportunity, first ever training for men. We've had a really great time engaging men in the community, a great opportunity for men who want to volunteer, not sure what to do, or men who are really honestly angry about the violence that they see in their communities. So we currently have 5 candidates scheduled for interviews, and we hope to get 10 to 15 volunteers who will go through that June training. We also have scheduled in the summer 2 Boy Strength camps. And part of the training is for those boys, I'm sorry, for the men to teach 2 boy strength camps along with trained girl strength instructors. So we'll have a male and female co-trainers. So that's the training. Anything I missed on that? I think we're good. That kind of wraps it up. We want it to be brief. I want to end on our future. You know, in our future, when I look at long term, I can see this program, as I'm sure you can, being very, very successful. So we do hope to replicate the cost-effective model that the Police Bureau has with Women's Strength and Girls Strength, which is 1 paid employee per 30 volunteer instructors. So we each, for one of us, we've got 30 unpaid employees out in the community doing the good work. And that Boys Strength director would do similar roles that Carolyn and I do with Women's Strength and Girls Strength, overseeing development and growth of the program and organizing and training new volunteers. So the note I want to leave you on, which is our hope and our goal, is that we can actually save the city money in violence prevention costs. And looking forward, we are actually looking at a formal program evaluation, should we deem funding in the future, to look at the costs of, you know, juvenile detention fees, legal fees, costs for and services for survivors, along with hopefully lowering the numbers on gang involvement of youth and young boys being involved in trafficking. So that's our hope.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So just as a reminder, this is a 6-month pilot program with one-time funding that the council allocated. So we'll need to have some discussions with and the other process as far as the budget goes. But thank you for presenting here today. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
And Captain Rodriguez are here as well. So any comments from the Police Bureau?
Wendy Steinbrunn, Lieutenant, Family Services Division. My comment was to reiterate that once we train the volunteers, the program itself is actually very low cost, but in the future we would like to hire a director, but I understand that's not part of the next budget cycle, but we'd like it to be in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Others that want to speak?
Well, we have another
presentation.
Sorry,
you have more people?
Yes, thank you.
Set up. Good. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
So the other... allocation of funding was for services to survivors, and so we have Janice Youth, LifeWorks, and the Sexual Assault Resource Center here to tell us about that part. And again, thank you very much for your patience.
Good morning. Welcome. I'm starting, yes?
Yes.
All right. My name is Kevin Donegan. I work for Janice Youth Programs. Dennis Morrow, who you know, is in Eugene today, so Dennis asked me to step in and present to council. A couple things. One is thank you for the work that you do with the county on this issue and that partnership, because without that partnership, it would be difficult to provide this level of services. And I know we're here to speak on the one-time-only funds about that, but that was a future thank you for the partnership with the city and county. So I prepared a few statements here. This past winter, the city council approved additional funds to increase the age capacity of our program. Our program was meant for children between the ages of 14 and 17, and we had a need out there for individuals between 18 and 20 who needed some type of service that Athena House provided, the residential program, but we were unable to provide that service. Harry's mother for 30 years has always provided services to kids 17 and younger, and so one would think it would be simple to increase capacity just a few years, and programmatically it was a struggle to integrate those populations. Jumping ahead 4 or 5 months, it hasn't been an issue. So we foresee continuing this past the one-time-only funding that the city is providing to keep that capacity from as young as 14 through 20-year-old young people coming into the program. So I think that was a long-term effect from the funding that was provided that was helpful. The next point I'm going to bring up initially is not related to the increased funding approved by the City Council, but eventually it will tie into the outcome as to how the funds are being expended. The program's not an easy program design or run because there isn't an evidence-based national model out there. I participate as a subject matter expert for the Federal Department of Human Services, the Administration of Children and Family Services, and we've convened a couple of meetings in D.C. and a few webinar meetings to talk with other experts in this area around what the needs are out there and what the services are needed to help out these young people. Our program has consistently been providing service to children and young adults involved in sexual exploitation for almost 3 years now, which is unheard of. Usually a program is going to open up for a few months, close down, open up for 6 months and close down. That's been our experience nationally. In late January, I held a focus group and had 6 young women, one of whom brought her 4-week-old daughter to the focus group. All of these young women had resided at Athena House anywhere from 7 to 8 weeks up to 6 months. I met with them for about 3 hours, and it was nonstop talking. There were many insightful observations that came up, but the two most important were when I asked how these young people got involved in sex trafficking, all of them had a little bit different of an answer, but underlying it was the same issue. There was no caring adult when this child was 11, 12, 13 that cared enough about them to know who they were with, where they were going, what was going on. And so these children were left to fend for themselves. And that was the common story about there. And I know that's a general statement there. And then also, they let me know loud and clear what was missing from the Athena House program. And I'll get to that one a little bit later. So now I'm coming back to the reason for the additional funding. The moment that we put the word out Athena House would serve young adults between 18 and 20, we had 4 young people who ended up on our doorstep immediately, the next day. The message was put out through social media because our Athena House residential program staff kept in contact with the 100, I didn't count them all, but the 100 of young people that have experienced our program to say we now can help young people over the age of 18. What ended up happening once that word got out was 2 of the young youth immediately came back into the program to get out of violent, abusive, and dangerous situations, as well as trying to overcome drug addiction. So it was pretty significant drug addiction, and they had difficulty getting away from that life without any support system in place, and so we were able to provide that. Since the winter, we've been able to serve a total of 5 young women 18 or over. Some just needed a short stay as a safe place to get away from the exploiter, and others have been with us for months. The impact of older youth on our younger youth program so far has been minimal. So again, we anticipate continuing this past this point. Now, here's the important point that I think you want to hear. How has the additional funding benefited the program? Of course, we now have been able to assist young women 18 or over, which is what we agreed to do. We increased the age of capacity, but when I look at the day-to-day operations and actually track where the City of Portland funds went, I can tie it back to the focus group and what the girls in attendance wanted. They wanted to work with staff that had similar backgrounds of exploitation as minors and staff that looked like them, primarily people of color. As a nonprofit, it's difficult to have increased staffing when the staff aren't being paid for, and so that was a struggle. And then trying to recruit people with a history of sexual exploitation, those individuals generally don't want to come out of the shadows. They don't want to acknowledge once they've gotten through that life. They don't want to acknowledge that they've been through that and come back for that. And then also a significant population that we serve are kids of color. And so trying to find people with that background and also people of color is not an easy thing to do, given the rate that we pay for social service workers that do residential work, and then also the struggle of individuals with that experience have a significant criminal history. And everyone that works in our agency has to go through a background clearance check through the state of Oregon and through law enforcement. And you can imagine the length of histories of some of these individuals. And so these funds have been able to provide me with a cushion to reach out and work with parole and probation officers to have them identify people on their caseloads. And I've had a parole officer get a hold of me and said, there's a woman here I think you would appreciate meeting. And I met her and hired her the minute after I met her because of her experience and her phenomenal attitude about coming back and wanting to help. And so I was able to provide her with employment when I didn't have an opening, which I couldn't do under normal circumstances. In addition, a young woman came back to me and who had been through the life and that experience and said, would you ever employ somebody like me? Well, shortly thereafter, I took her up on our offer. And the joint partnership with SARC has been instrumental because the people I've hired have been able to go through their SARC training and have provided, again, without the additional funding, I could never have done that. When I place an ad for staff in our program, I generally get, which is phenomenal, but you can guess the type of individual, generally young, generally college-educated, generally socially conscientious individual, generally Caucasian, who are all phenomenal individuals. But again, when I'm working with a household of young women who are primarily of color, who don't come from those backgrounds, it's difficult for them to connect with some staff and vice versa. So the funding has increased the capacity, which is what we agreed to do, but then also really helped us to integrate survivors into our program, which I would have never been able to do. So that part was an unintended consequence of this. So I thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Amanda Swanson from the Sexual Assault Resource Center, sitting in for Aaron Ellis, who is in Hood River right now. Speaking with this pilot project, it has definitely, I'll step back. About a year ago, we realized that 46% of our caseload was turning 18. With that, a lot of other services were falling away, and we didn't feel it was ethically appropriate for us to get rid of services because once you turn 18, you don't automatically know how to be an adult, and you don't know automatically how to navigate the adult system. So with that, we built our transition age program, so 18 to 25-year-olds. The beginning was very slow, trying to just transition youth from our current caseload to the new program. With this pilot project, we have seen our numbers blow up. These are the numbers in front of you that the report that was given that have come from specifically missions that the local Portland police have done. Right now, we have one case manager for our 18 to 25-year-olds. She has 35 active cases. With this pilot program, it has opened up a lot of different avenues that we have gotten referrals from. Pre-trial from POs, from a lot of different community partners, realizing that this population and this age group really lack services. Also, with this money, we've been able to have a relationship with the NOW program to be able to bring in the mental health component that we don't offer. So building that collaborative effort, they get wraparound services with mental health, they get wraparound services with housing with Janus Youth, and then advocacy working with life skills and helping them through the legal process. Mayor Hales actually met a few of our survivors at our leadership conference. For now, we are being able to have a leadership group to build and help these women become active members of society and to help them speak up and kind of stop the cycle. So that is pretty much the gist of what we've been able to do with this money and with the pilot project. Thank you.
I'm Kristen Lum Williams with the New Options for Women program with LifeWorks Northwest. Good morning, Mayor Hales. If you put them together, that's what would come up. And city commissioners, good to see you all again. First and foremost, I want to thank you again for this pilot funding. This amount of money has changed a lot of what we can do in the NOW program and with this larger collaborative, as you've already heard. So I just wanted to thank you again for it. What I'm going to report today is what we've been able to do with that funding in this pilot project. So for the NOW program, the treatment component, the mental health, addictions, and case management component of this whole collaborative, we've been able to add a whole new set of programming for the 18 to 25-year-old population that I had just sitting on the table. I didn't have staff or time or resources to be able to begin, and I've been able to start that programming. And so we have mental health, addictions, and case management life skills mentoring groups for that specific population. Prior to this pilot and that funding that allowed us to do so, every woman who came into our program who was under 25 years of age just met with me for individual counseling, mental health and addiction treatment. They never had the group process. They never were able to receive that group therapy, which is a really big component. Community is important, especially finding other people who've had similar experiences, because being in the life and being in the cycle of violence that is human trafficking, it's very isolating. I can't tell anybody about this because I'm the only one. So we didn't feel it was safe or ethical to put these younger women in group with the older women who are 40, 45 years old. And so we've been able to take away that isolation and have groups for them. So this partnership with the Sexual Assault Resource Center and the case manager, we've had 10 women in this time so far referred to us, and we've been working with the Sexual Assault Resource Center to get these women into our services. That is a huge number, and this collaborative has been very crucial to making that piece work, because if we get a call from DHS and they have a girl who is 18 and she calls me, I tell her about the NOW program, and then I say, Have you ever been hooked up with the Sexual Assault Resource Center? And they say, oh, yeah, my case manager is, oh, I, and I can say, well, I work with them. And, you know, if you want to meet with them or talk with them and ask them about me, because this younger age group is a total different ballgame. And we're giving them the choice for treatment instead of later in life when they don't have a choice because they've been arrested and they're mandated. So then they're sitting in my office oftentimes, you know, at the beginning kind of like, you know, this versus they have the choice to come to treatment. And that, for outcomes from a mental health clinician perspective, that is a huge change and shift. So that has been one thing. We've been able to, we have 9 women engaged in our, who are actively engaged, 100% of groups. So we have 10 women, but only 9 of them have come to 100% of what their programming is. So that's pretty good in my opinion. So those 9 women, without this pilot funding, they would go back to meet individually, one-on-one, with a staff member. The staff member that we were able to hire because of this pilot funding, she would go away. And so then all of that capacity would go back into my caseload. And so we would go back to that isolation. They wouldn't have the group in that community. The other part of this collaborative that is I'm so proud of, and I know I've come and told you how proud I am of it a lot of times, but we've coordinated our programming with the RISE program at SARC's programming, and also we've been working with the Athena House now that they have the increased age limits. So now we've created a system where our groups are on different days than the RISE program groups. So this group of women has a program to attend every single day of the week for that support. I'm able to coordinate services for this younger population that has different needs with the Sexual Assault Resource Center in a capacity we were not able to before. And so I'm not an advocate, and I know I've told you all that before. I run a treatment program, but the treatment doesn't always work for this population, 18, 25, and even the adult older women, without that advocacy and that support that the Sexual Assault Resource Center and the Janus Youth Programs are able to support and provide. So really, this pilot funding allowed us to show the city of Portland the phenomenal collaborative we have, but take it to an official capacity where we can actually give these women a choice to get treatment, to get clean and sober, to work through their issues of trauma and abuse and any mental health needs they have, and so that when they're older, they aren't arrested and then sent to our program. So in that, we've also helped 3 of these 18, 25-year-old women obtain basic need items, such as ID. I think 3 of them have ID and a birth certificate, a Social Security card, and then a couple other ones, they didn't need those items, but they were able to get bus passes and other basic need items that help them to not go back to an abuser or go back to a situation because they don't have money for those things. And the oldest woman in this current fiscal year who entered our program for the first time, I know I'm getting off topic from the pilot, but she's 54 years old. When she was between the ages of 18 and 25, none of these services existed. Can you imagine if we had this collaborative, not just as a pilot, but as a system in Portland, now, if we had that for her then, would she be now entering treatment at age 54? And there's seven other women in their 50s in our program in this current fiscal year, and we're not even, we have two more months, right? So, and there's nine who are in their 40s. So just think about that 54-year-old woman's life when she was 18. And this is so powerful that we get to do this, and I'm so grateful that you gave us this pilot funding money because it's only nine women so far, but we have, I think, four others who are in process of, from SARC referrals, getting into our intakes. And we're able to have access every day for them to bring someone to. And SARC, this, if I say SARC, is that okay? Sexual Assault Resource Center is a mouthful. So the SARC advocates do not drive people in their car. And now program has a car for the program that we drive. So we're able to increase access by going and picking up the woman and the SARC advocate, if they, the SARC case manager, I'm used to saying advocate because we never had an actual case manager, for our population, and bring them to our treatment program. So we're able to bridge that gap even more, and we wouldn't be able to do that without the pilot funding. So I think that is everything I wanted to update you on. And so far this year, that, you know, that woman who is 54 who is in our program for the first time, she's one of 93 women we've served so far this year. And if we had these services for her then, maybe we would have lower numbers, which I'm looking forward to when we have lower numbers in our program because that means we're doing our job. So I just want to thank you for this pilot funding. And just I'm so proud of this collaborative that we have in Portland, and I really hope that you are proud of the work we're doing because I'm really happy to be part of this team. And I'm going to stop because I get all happy. So thank you.
That's really impressive in just in less than 4 months because we didn't get the money right out of the door right away either. So thank you very much for your work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you all. We have others? And then is there anyone else that wants to speak on this?
We have
this
two
item?
People signed up, Michelle Munt and Sarah Hobbs.
Come on up, please.
You will think this... On the topic of sex trafficking, you'll think I'm being funny because when I get stressed out, I'm trying to be funny, but when I get stressed out, I make weird facial expressions. But I'm actually serious. And I want to refer to only one part of the last 20 minutes about the training for boys about domestic violence. I think that was the topic, abuse, sexual in nature. They were calling it girl on or man on woman. And then they threw in that it could be male on male, I guess, too. So it's on the sexual abuse. To stop sexual abuse was the topic. I'm not referring to all the programs because, you know, we've been talking about sexual abuse for the last 20 minutes. All right? I'm sorry. I'm going to smile because you will think it's funny, but I am really probably going to go jump up and sit down. For me, the Portland police, which my note says cops equal domestic violence. Police are domestic violence. I'm repeating myself so you understand my main point. This class, helping boys not to rape girls, is, I think that's what was being talked about, and not hurting. The cops and the Portland police need to be taught this class, not to abuse people. I'm just saying it another way. Take the program across the street. Did I say my name, Michelle Munt? Are the police listening? Please, I do want to be known. Take the program for stopping sexual abuse across the street to Portland police, especially the male-on-male molesting portion of it, or be sure to include that. I'm sure there's a lot of heterosexual ones. The reason is I've witnessed bloodied faces of male prostitutes across the street from you, and I saw the police hit them in the face in a three-block radius. And I need to leave because I've seen numerous incidents of the Portland police making young males cry out in pain under the auspices that they're handcuffing them and checking their pockets for stuff, which they are. And I feel too triggered by all this. I see Portland police hurting the tissue, and I see blood, and I see strawberries in the last 2 years, and it doesn't even pale between the other people being shot in the back by Portland police. over in North Portland, using my little white privilege language, okay, sorry. I can't report my reports because it doesn't pale. It doesn't compare with someone getting killed. Mine are just minor, and they're getting away with it. So I need to sit down. I love you guys for letting me say this. Please realize they need jobs. Everybody needs a job. If you had a job, you wouldn't have to prostitute yourself. And I'm not a former prostitute that you can't find a black prostitute, former prostitute in Portland, to help out at that house. Give me a break.
All right. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Sarah Hobbs. This past December, I sat before you at expressing a concern for the 18 to young, mid-20 crowd that was aging out with no services. And I never thought I would sit here and say this, but for once, I'm sitting in front of y'all feeling like I've been heard. But the word I kept hearing was pilot project. That says to me, grant money that might go away. I ask that you keep supporting the efforts. I got emotional. For the record, I am not a sex trafficking survivor, but one of my dearest friends is. So my opinions are based on a person who has lived through this nightmare. And so please keep working with these awesome groups. Thank you. But to kind of build on something Michelle was saying, what I do hear a lot from sex trafficking survivors is if you're being, and I'm going to use a language, forgive me here for a minute, if you're being raped, if you're being sodomized, if you're getting the shit beat out of you, why don't you call the cops? And the commenting often is, yeah, we want to call the cops, get arrested, and now we have a record we have to deal with on top of everything else. I know there has been down in Salem some legislation that was proposed to have it in the Oregon state law that if a, and I don't say female because there are male sex trafficking victims as well, but if anybody is picked up under the suspicion of prostitution that indeed has been documented as a sex trafficking victim, that they don't be charged with prostitution because then it falls on their backs. They have to go to the effort to get the record expunged. But yeah, Charles knows it's a pretty tough topic for me to talk about, so he's sitting here for moral support. Yeah, like I said, thank you for funding. It was a very grave concern for me. It's for the younger group, and it's encouraging. But please keep the effort up, and let's think about the legals for them as well.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I just wanted to echo some of the sentiments of these wise, strong women, and I especially appreciate Ms. Munt's comments talking about the maybe not so unique or maybe unique situation faced by young men who are involved in sex work. The main thing I want to echo is her comment about pilot projects and the need for the people who are experiencing these problems to get even more attention and resources from the government. I personally feel the mayor meets a little bit too often with some of the uppity-ups, such as the Portland Business Alliance, and I would hope that in his schedule he can find some time to meet with you and the people from this program and from Janus Youth Services. A friend of mine recently graduated from Reed. Sam Smith works at a Janus Youth program, which I think does similar work to what was talked about here. And this is, you know, one of the most important things that we can be talking about, and I look forward to hearing more from City Council about how you're having discussion among yourselves, the people from Cascadia, people who monitor emergency rooms, so that we can hopefully even reach people involved in sex trafficking before they even have an encounter with the police. And I hope that you'll see that there's some reporting so that you get clear information from Chief Reese about how many people we've successfully diverted out of the expensive court system into a more humane, still somewhat expensive, but a much more humane and effective program. This even relates somewhat, unfortunately, to what we opened up this meeting with. When I was gone, I was at an eviction for an African-American woman who can't have her water turned on by the Water Bureau. But this council opened with three or four people talking about their perspectives on the situation in Hawthorne Boulevard. And a small part of that is disadvantaged and unemployed youth who might also be having experiencing with pressure to be sex trafficked. So this issue is unfortunately related to life in every Portland neighborhood, and it's related to some of the problems we see in our streets. And the more we can find humane, well-staffed programs to deal with this, the more the police can concentrate on real crimes of violence. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. Anybody else? Then we need a motion to adopt the report.
So moved.
Second. And a roll call to adopt the report, please.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing this report to us. And thank all the providers, Janice and Sark and New Options. Did I get that right? New Options. Okay. And Portland Police, Family Services Division. Thank you all for your great work. Aye.
Novick.
Thanks again for your work and for the presentation. Aye.
Fritz.
So this project has already exceeded my wildest expectations, and I'm so grateful for your work to hear that it has provided a system rather than a set of well-intentioned but disjointed efforts is music to my ears. And I'm so happy that ongoing funding is in the mayor's proposed budget with the agreement with the chair, County Multnomah County Chair Marisa Madrigal, who also recognizes this. So thank you so much for that. And I believe that there will be more good news when the mayor introduces his budget tomorrow, because it's very clear that this set of services is so needed. So we will be bringing a second report, as promised, in the pilot project grants in August. And I can't imagine how well you're going to be doing at that point, because this is really splendid. The one piece that I am concerned about now is ongoing funding for Boy Strength. So that's something that we will need to be looking at in the Police Bureau budget. But what a great celebration of being the first in the country. Duh, how come we... nobody has thought of that before, but at least your wonderful people in Women's Strength did think of it, and the Police Bureau has been supporting it. There's also a great amount of work being done by the police in the human trafficking services, who, in fact, don't arrest people. They do get them to services. And I was at...
find some help to get that information out. Because that is a big thing. I can't.
All right, well, let me talk then, and we'll like get the information out, okay? So I was at an event that was pulled together by Sergeant Gallagher and have...
Everything today has been all for the elites. All these jobs, Amanda...
Okay, no. You've got to stand down, please.
You're not giving the money to black people. You're giving the money to the white women.
I think she missed the point, but
Amanda,
sorry, keep going.
That's okay. So the work that's been done not only with these valued nonprofits, but also with the faith communities in setting up a system that the faith communities can be alerted when someone gets off the streets or into one of these programs to provide assistance. And it was astonishing to me to hear things like, number one, that we have faith communities that have 6,000 members, but second of all, that they put out the message that somebody needs a plane ticket to Utah to get back to family, and that need is met that same evening. And the same with clothing and with many other basic needs, which means so much. And as well as the report that I believe Commissioner Saltzman is going to be bringing with the mayor about how faith communities are partnering to truly help people who are homeless and be their friends as well as their providers and benefactors. So we're starting to put things together. It's been a very difficult 5 years with the recession, and this program shows that we have made some wise choices about investments that, in fact, are providing a system and improving things dramatically one person at a time. Thank you very much for your support for it. Aye.
Hales.
Thank you. Great report. I really appreciate the collaboration from my dealings with particularly the Family Services Division, but not just them. There are a lot of people in the Police Bureau that love these opportunities to get upstream and make a difference upstream, and Lieutenant Steinbrunn and Captain Rodriguez are among them, but there are a lot of folks in the Bureau that just see how valuable this is. In fact, I'm going to the graduation tonight for the 20 new volunteers for Girl Strength and Women's Strength. So really excited about that program and the expansion to our young men. Our Black Male Achievement Initiative is another effort at this to get upstream at the issues of family life and violence, because those two go together for positive or for negative. So I like where we're headed. Thank you for your leadership. Aye.
If I might just add a thanks to Christina Nieves in my office, who, and to the presenters today. It wasn't until I saw that KCU news clip that I remembered that we had promised to bring a report in April, and so here we are, April 30, getting into the board. Thank you to Christina.
Made it. Very good. Okay, we have